PC Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with TC Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
And shoe buyer.
And shoe buyer.
I haven't bought any shoes in a long time. I think I should go buy shoes.
Okay. When you're out there, buy me some
as
well.
I think it's important to have goals.
Yeah.
So that's my goal for today.
Isn't it Secretary's Day coming up or something?
I wouldn't know about that.
Oh, all right. So that over there laughing, that's Will Hottie Patati Schmidt. What's going on, Will?
Hi. I have shoes that could be updated also, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
What if we just traded shoes and then we could be
pretend?
That's
new to me.
Essential shoes.
They don't look new.
Shoes. It's new to me. That's a new line of shoes. Essential. So this is part two of last week's supplements, the good, the bad, and the ugly, or the worthless.
Where were you for part one? Why didn't you hang out in part one, people?
Yeah.
You missed it. It was great.
Oh, we didn't leave with the cliffhanger.
Oh, man.
So they might not come back, all four listeners. But if you have not liked us on Facebook, you got to do it. Everybody's doing it these days. You know, you will be out, left out in the cold if you don't. So go to Facebook. Go to kickitinthenuts.com. No, just kick it in the nuts. I don't know what I'm saying.
It's different. Thanks.
Yeah, it's different. It's just on Facebook. And that's where we are going to post all of our topics about the shows coming up. And you guys can ask questions or you can even, you know, suggest show topics that you want to hear about. We are open to that.
Yeah, and the last week we covered a lot of stuff about supplements, but we're going to try, we had so many questions, we're going to try and get into some of those questions this week to about specific supplements.
I feel like we barely got anywhere with it last week.
I know,
week,
we just rambled. We rambled for about an hour. But one thing that I wanted to hit, I don't think anybody had a question about this, is that a lot of people will say, well, I just want to fix things with food. I have a lot of health issues, but I just want to fix them with food, so I want to go that way. And the first thing is that, first of all, you have to be able to digest that food. And a lot of people that have digestive issues are going to have to use supplements to fix those. Otherwise, they're going to have a real hard time doing that. And the other thing is that the problem that we're facing right now is that the food is not what it used to be. Even if we're buying organic food, that doesn't mean that it contains all the nutrients that it did 60 years ago. Say things about that, Will.
Yeah, I talk a lot about this. In I created a free 10-lesson video series for our supplement product line, Natural Selection Nutritionals. And lesson 9 is pretty much all about this, where we talk about nutrient density in our food being absent due to changes in agricultural practices. So when we started over-farming our land, we depleted the mineral resources in our soils, so our plants started to grow up weaker and less nutritious. But also, because they were weaker, they were more subject to attacks from pests. And so we started using pesticides to help the plants survive, even though they were weaker. And that, the pesticides, then also killed all of the biology in the soil, like all the bacteria and fungus and earthworms and things like that. So that created a big, big, big problem with our crops being able to get nutrients. Just like if you kill all the flora in your intestinal tract, it screws up your ability to absorb nutrients. Same thing happened with the soil and our to the bacteria in the soil of our farmland. So now we had plants that were nutrient depleted because there wasn't enough minerals in the soil. And the soil then got nuked by the pesticides and herbicides, so it killed all the biology that should help support the plants even more. So we had to even use even more pesticides and genetic modifications to our plants just to make them grow up looking healthy. And they're not.
Right, but they're pretty.
They're not at all healthy. And so the scientists are really clever in finding ways to make, just like they do with livestock, finding ways to make the plants grow really fast and look bright in color. And they do all sorts of post-harvest treatments to make them look nicer and last longer on shelves. But the fact is, a lot of the foods are like the models in Hollywood. They look amazing on the outside, but like completely rotten. completely rotten. so like that's the state of most of our food. So That plus it has like a lot of our foods have a lot of toxins sprayed onto them and soaked up in through the soils. So we're getting all that as our food source that we're
and
supposed
the
to.
Animals eat that, and right? Then they eat the animals,
right? Whether you're eating plants or animals, like you're getting those all those toxins and the lack of nutrients showing up in the foods. It creates all these stress hormones. So there's a huge, huge problem with the nutrient density in our food supply, as well as all the chemical additives that are used to help make that food supply the most profitable industry it can possibly be. And that's the food that's supposed to be our medicine, that's supposed to like heal us.
Right. So it's a problem. So if you are living out in the woods somewhere and you're growing your own food and you're doing that correctly, where you're working with the biology of the soil, then you may be able to fix a lot of stuff just with that food.
Or you live somewhere in Europe. Their food's better than ours, but it's getting worse. But
they're catching up with us just fine.
An apple will last like 2 or 3 days there, and then it's going bad. I'm like, what? This will last like 3-4 weeks in my fridge,
Right. Right. So if you have access to something like that, it's great, but most people don't. And that's where supplements can kind of be helpful, because if you get some high quality products, you can get concentrated forms of foods that contain nutrients that we need. And that's kind of the way that we look at it. So we should really get into some questions, but I also forgot that Karen posted a question about this show on the Kick It in the Nuts Facebook page about, she wanted to know about kombucha. She says she has a trouble eating yogurt because of dairy stuff, which we talked about last week, how to improve that. But we also talked a little bit last week about how, you know, there's other fermented foods that could be good. And I don't have a lot of experience with kombucha. She was wondering if it can push imbalances one direction or the other. And I don't know of any direction that it pushes imbalances. Do you?
Yeah, I do. I'm from the hippie world.
Yeah, you're in with that crowd.
That's my origins. Other than the muscle and fitness, like toxic nutrition kind of world, I went the other spectrum to the holistic hippie health protocol of superfoods and things, and kombucha is one of their like heavily touted superfoods.
And we're just hoping you go to the nudist world.
Yeah, I'm working my way, me too. But I know a lot of people that have used kombucha really heavily, and what's funny is a lot of them will do that and they'll be on like a no sugar, low sugar diet, but then they're drinking kombucha. And kombucha is like it's a yeast / fungus somewhere in that realm of microorganisms that lives on sugar. And just like yeast in beer creates alcohol from its own excrement, that's what's happening with kombucha. So it's creating a lot of metabolites and alcohol. So kombucha can become an alcoholic beverage if you let it ferment enough. So I...
Kenna always looking for a loophole.
Yeah, like I'm not drinking. Been off
I'm
the bottle.
Just drinking kombucha.
But I think a lot of the people that feel like the lift from kombucha are also people that are energy deficient and could potentially feel a similar lift from a cocktail. Like there's sugar and there's ferments and acetate in your kin, just in his eyes. Like, I'm going to go get some kombucha. But I don't like it for that reason. And I haven't seen tons of improvement from people using it, other than potentially a placebo effect of like, oh, it's super healthy. And there may be benefits that I am oblivious to, but just as a type of product being a sugar-based ferment like alcohol, I'm weary.
It's not your favorite.
Yeah, not my favorite solution for fixing problems.
Right, I don't view it as... don't ever have that. I just don't view it as the solution as it's being touted to be.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't use it with clients or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think if somebody was drinking one, I don't think I would knock it out of their hand.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Right. I'll put mine away.
All right. We got a bunch of questions. Let's start rocking.
Well, today, though, all of our listeners can get a free audio book from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details.
Audible.com.
Audible.com. All right. So where were we? We were at Adam. Fantastic. I was just thinking you should do a show on this.
That's why we did it, Adam.
Uh-huh. Creatine, DHEA, and caffeine. I know most supplements you get from the stores are garbage, especially those geared towards fitness, but these are the ones I find to be the most useful. The problem I have is using DHEA. By third day, I have dizziness and panic attacks. I can't use more than the equivalent of a cup of coffee of caffeine without the same panic attacks. Lastly, I wonder what your thoughts are on creatine. more harm than good or a useful supplement. Keep up the good work, guys. And Kenna.
So, good job, Kenna.
Good job. Let's
hit a couple of different things here. Do you want to hit creatine first?
Yeah. I used to be a fan of it before I learned about some of the problems that come with excess phosphate in the system. And it's really easy to just take creatine forever because, like, oh, like all the studies just show that it's just blatantly good. It makes you stronger. It makes you bigger. And you may experience some initial muscle edema or hypertrophy where your muscles get bigger from water retention, which isn't always a good thing, even though that may be like how you want to look. Like,
right.
Edema isn't necessarily a useful thing in all cases. But I am weary. Ray Pete has a pretty interesting article about phosphate metabolism. But it's, and I'm still learning more about it, but it makes me hesitant to like recommend creatine. Did you want me to keep talking about the other stuff?
No, and what I was going to say about creatine is that back, you know, this is probably 15 years ago when I used it, but I found that people would gain about 5 pounds of muscle relatively quickly because your, you know, the muscles are holding on to that water. But then that was it. Like, you couldn't keep taking it and continue to get that amount of gains. It was just helping you, those muscles just expand a little bit. So I didn't feel like that was worth whatever it might be doing to me that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
And so, and now other stuff is surfacing to show that it might not. With DHEA giving you dizziness and panic attacks, so that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want Adam to have dizziness and panic attacks. So let's talk, because there's a few different reasons that this could be happening, and I don't remember which direction Adam's chemistry leans or if he's talked about that in our free support group or not, but DHEA is considerably procatabolic. So and it's this naturally occurring hormone in the body, and but people tout a lot of benefits from using DHEA, like anti-aging and energy and erectile dysfunction and stuff like that. But it kind of makes you look at it like, we know that when there's a problem in the body, that the body will often raise hormone levels to try and fix whatever the problem is, and whether it's adrenaline or some other issue. It'll jack up some hormone levels to try and fix the problem. And so I kind of wonder if using DHEA is almost like jacking up hormone levels to help the body have like a backup source of things to deal with problems. So, but it's very pro-catabolic. So one thing I'm wondering is if Adam is already too catabolic and he's using something that's pushing him more catabolic, it can kind of cause a lot of the potassium to leave the cells and cause an imbalance at that tissue level. And without enough potassium in the right place, signals don't travel correctly, and you could end up having the body go into a bit of a panic. That's one way for a body to go into a panic attack. But it's that problem with signals traveling that can often create that dizziness kind of situation. And of course, you know, we know that low blood pressure and low mineral levels can cause a lot of dizziness and panic attacks too. And we also know that creating too much lactic acid from being in an overly anabolic state can create panic attacks. But with this situation, it seems like it may be pushing you too far catabolic. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's interesting with caffeine is that that's a similar situation, to where small amounts of caffeine can be very pro-anabolic, but larger amounts of caffeine can be very pro-catabolic for a lot of people. So if you're getting a similar situation as you would from caffeine, it's clearly that they're pushing you the wrong direction either way. So I don't know whether you naturally stand too anabolic or too catabolic, but look at where that is and look at those things as pushing you the wrong direction, so don't do them.
Yeah, you'd want to, and you could clarify what exactly is happening in your chemistry when using those different supplements by doing a couple quick self-tests, like looking at your blood pressure, looking at your urine and saliva pH, looking at your breath rate, and seeing where those things are. Like caffeine could be useful, like if your body needs a little help performing glycolysis, but if it ends, because it speeds the rate at which your body burns through available glucose. So that could be useful initially, like when you're working out, and then you burn through all of your glucose and you have this panic attack from a hypoglycemic episode. And so you feel dizzy and anxious.
It could cause dizziness too, yeah.
Right. So we'll see your body's freaking out because it ran out of resources. And it could be happening for the same reason or a different reason with DHEA. It could be pushing, it could be having a similar sort of impact of stress hormones that are accelerating glycolysis and causing you to go into a hypoglycemic episode, which you could figure out. You could take your blood sugar at the time and see like, oh, is that it? Or is it just your electrolytes are low? Or was there some problem? Did it have more of like a fatty acid kind of effect? And did it get in the way of energy production? And you've got really strong catabolic markers, like is your urine pH really low and stuff?
Right. And so you can do that. And we learned the anabolic and catabolic stuff from Ravisi, Emmanuel Ravisi. And one interesting thing that he did is that he would have a client, and to help figure out what direction the imbalance may be going, he would say, all right, go home tonight, and I want you to have a little bit of coffee and some soft cooked boiled eggs where the yolk is still runny. And if that particular food combination made them much worse, then he knew that they were too anabolic, because those things will normally push most people more anabolic. So now we've learned a little more about this, and you can kind of run tests like this with supplements and, you know, watch what your pH is doing and stuff like that. But this is the same idea. Look at what these things are doing to your chemistry, and that can give you a better understanding of where your chemistry is and what might be better for you than something like DHEA.
All right, another one from Adam. If you have the time, also BCAAs, which is the branched chain amino acids, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and Steve from San Diego, California. Are branched chain amino acids good? What do the different amino acids do, and when is best to take them? Ricky, are there any particular amino acids I should take, or does that depend on my body chemistry? I'm trying to lose weight, and when I diet, I tend to get tired and sick with colds.
Mm.
Don't get sick.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I choose against that.
Right. Well, we've talked a little bit before about the benefits of whole food sources of protein, if you can digest them. Because when you're taking, like, you know, supplement company manufactured branched chain amino acids, they don't have all those other naturally occurring cofactors. And they also usually have some weird sort of additives, whether they're intentional or just part of the manufacturing process, that they got added, like, you know, toxins in them. So if you can use whole food forms of protein and digest them effectively, those are generally superior choice. As far as like supplementing with them, in addition to like good whole food form sources of amino acids, there are a lot of different amino acids that can impact your chemistry in different ways. So you'll want to be aware of like what amino acids did they include in that mix and how is that impacting you. Like if it had a lot of leucine, it could be really elevated in your insulin, which might be something you want to include for like an anabolic
effect. For a pro-anabolic effect.
Right. But you might not want that at all if you're looking to create a different reaction, like stay like, leaner.
Like lean, like burn body fat.
Yeah, right.
Type of thing.
So you want to understand, and also like there's usually like glutamine included in those, and that might be a very great thing for you, or might be a very bad thing for you, depending on where your chemistry is. Like, are you trying to push your body to be more anabolic or to be more catabolic?
Right, and so the BCAAs usually have leucine, isoleucine, and valine, and the matrix aminos that Empirical makes is a similar type of situation that has glycine, proline, and lysine, which can be a great source of, you know, pro-anabolic amino acids if someone's like falling apart and horribly catabolic, and you kind of want to help them, you know, put themselves back together a little bit. But the problem is that the body, in order to use those very effectively, it's nice if the body is also getting another source of all of the cofactors that can go along with those amino acids, something like bone broth or a collagen type protein, which is really why we decided to use that in our protein powder. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Explain why that can be beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, the amino acids that are abundant in gelatin-rich foods or collagen, which if you don't know the difference, gelatin is a cooked form of collagen, and collagen's typically easier for people to digest with the shorter chains of proteins that are in there. And and easier to include in a supplement mix. Like if you tried to like put gelatin powder in a shake, it'd be a disaster. But
right, it's good. It might make a lot of people gassy too and cause discomfort.
Yeah, as it bloats things. But collagen proteins or gelatin can be, when cooked or prepared right, are really, really helpful because of the predominance of the types of amino acids that make up collagen / gelatin, and also the absence of other amino acids that we don't need nearly as much of in our diet, like tryptophan and cysteine and histidine. We get an overabundance of a lot of imbalancing amino acids from our cultural norms, like our over consumption of meats and even from plant-based proteins that do not have an abundance of one of the most important amino acids, of glycine. So glycine is usually not listed as an essential amino acid because our body can make it from other things. But we see from tons of studies that our health and longevity and hormone levels are massively improved when our diet has a predominance of the amino acids found in gelatin and collagen-based foods, and a lower amount of the amino acids that are found in things like meat and whey and plant proteins.
Right, and so if you want to supplement some type of additional amino acids, it's nice if you're also either using bone broth regularly, so you're getting all of those amino acid profiles, or some type of collagen protein. Mm-hmm. Which is why, you know, we were looking, do we want to put, egg in the protein? What kind of protein do we want to use? And we have some protein questions coming up. Maybe we'll save that conversation when we get to those questions.
Sure.
One more thing too, is amino acid supplements, you can take them with or away from food. But like most minerals, you need to take with food so that they have that digestive function helping them absorb. But amino acids will generally go right in.
Yeah. And also a quick note about it. When I used to think of protein, I used to just think of like building blocks of like, oh, that's what our cells are made of. And they are. But they also have powerful hormonal effects when they're floating in the bloodstream. So it's important to know about that. You're not just building muscle when you take branched-chain amino acids.
Right,
they
do other stuff, yeah.
Yeah, you're affecting your hormone levels and your chemistry pretty powerfully.
All right, Beth. I was using 1 or 2 HCL per mil for about a month and didn't notice any improvement to my bloating or constipation, so I stopped. Could something else be causing my bloating? She could probably take more.
Right, yeah, and I see this mistake a lot. The bottle probably says take 1 per meal or something. And that's another thing with supplements. Dosage is a big deal because the supplement companies put a dose on the bottle that will protect them, that will keep them from being sued when someone takes too much, and people can take too much of things, but that dose is usually not enough to create a result, because when you're trying to improve physiology using food sources, you need more of it, even when it's concentrated forms, than you would of a drug that's going to change your whole chemistry in a half an hour. Mm. You know, those are powerful pharmaceutical drugs. So when you're using some type of natural supplement, a lot of times the dosage needs to go a little bit higher. And when you look at HCL, you know, the average person creates a level of stomach acid per meal that's equivalent to about 5 capsules, if those capsules are about 550 milligrams each. So that's an average. So if someone's taking 2, in most cases, I see that not enough to fix digestion. Most people need to at least work up to the full dose of 5 to see how that does, and before their body starts making more of its own HCL, and then they can reduce it. But the other thing to consider is that somebody taking 1 or 2 capsules might be getting the equivalent of 0 capsules. Because if they have bacteria in their stomach that's creating all of this alkaline waste, you might be able to put 5 capsules in there, and it's really only going to be the acidity level of 1 or 2 with all that bacteria in there. So in that case, someone needs to take steps to wipe out some of that bacteria, and then as they start to use HCL, it'll be much more effective. Because if she's bloating and constipated, that's pretty slam dunk that she's not having enough stomach acid.
Yeah. And this is a huge issue that I guess you could say I have a pet peeve of about, like, because you'll get so many.
My pet peeve is when people say pet peeve.
Oh, really? Pet peeve. I'm sorry, I won't do it anymore. No, I'm kidding. But what frustrates me is, and I get it, it's not people's fault because it's like new to them. And when they start trying to take HCL, a lot of the time they'll feel more constipation, or not more constipation, they'll feel more bloating.
More discomfort too.
Yeah. And they're like, this can't be right. But the thing is, like, your stomach is supposed to be super acidic. Even just sitting there without food in it, mm-hmm. it should be a pH around 1, which should burn through your hand. Like, it would burn your hand. But for people who have low hydrochloric acid levels, the pH can be up around 7, 8, higher than that.
Yeah, once bacteria can get in there and set up camp,
yeah.
their waste product makes it better for their family to live.
Yeah.
Just like you like to make your family in a better situation.
By pooping
to live
around the house.
Yeah, bacteria is the right. same way.
No, but they create like a welcoming ecosystem for themselves. So when you start to drop little hydrochloric acid bombs on their communities, it creates a huge disruption. There's off-gassing. They probably send out all sorts of endotoxins to try to combat, neutralize. Right. Who knows what's going
on? But they're freaking out.
Yeah, they're freaking out, and it's creating a big chemical reaction, just like if you were to take a little bit of apple cider vinegar and pour it into a big bowl of baking soda. Like, it would fizz a whole lot, right? Things look worse when you start doing that. But the fact of the matter is, the stomach is supposed to be acidic, and almost nothing is going to work right long-term until you fix that.
And one thing that I found that works really well is there's a product called Heartburn Free that you can get on Amazon and some health food stores. And it's basically like this orange extract kind of stuff. And it helps heartburn because it really wipes out bacteria in the stomach very well so that bacteria is no longer pushing up gas. If you have no idea what we're talking about, we have a reflux and heartburn episode that really digs into this a lot. So it's on iTunes, so check that out.
Yeah.
But if someone can take steps to wipe out that bacteria using this, or even Pepto-Bismol can be very effective if you use that away from food and only for a short period of time, like a 5 or 6 days max. But if you do that, then they can start using HCL and they'll do great. But it does seem to be like the people who need HCL the most will have the hardest time getting it started in many cases.
Yeah, and taking one or two is not taking it.
Like, right. You're not fixing anything.
If you can't take 4 or 5 and not have bloating, like, it shouldn't cause bloating. If you take too much HCL and if you take a full dose of HCL and you get the runs, okay, maybe that's too much HCL for you.
If it burns, right?
Well, if there's a warming in your stomach, yes. But if your stool gets really loose and you have flaming diarrhea, then you know that you at least took more HCL than your bile can neutralize. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to work on bile to fix it. But it can also be an indication that, hey, I took too much, and I don't need that much. My body can make some of its own.
Which is different than if you're feeling bloated or reflux or constipation still.
Or just discomfort in your stomach.
Yeah, all that's saying that your stomach is still not acidic enough. Because if it was, you wouldn't feel any bloating. You definitely wouldn't be constipated. And you for sure wouldn't have any reflux either unless you had a hiatal hernia.
So, Beth, I want you to try again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ginny, Lexington Park, Maryland. How do you add supplements for immediate health benefits, but then wean yourself off of them by adding in the necessary food?
That's a good question.
It is a good question, and there's a reasonable answer that we will provide.
Sure.
It's not the same for everyone.
Yeah, it goes like this. It goes, if you want to get the best results possible, you first want to know where your chemistry is so you can get an idea of what's going to create the benefits. Just throwing darts is not going to do it. You really got to know where to start from.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of it comes from, like, the supplements that you need to correct digestion are then going to enable you to use food to balance out your chemistry well. So if you start by focusing on that, you use whatever supplements you need to optimize your digestion, you're going to have a lot more success with then manipulating your chemistry with whole food sources. And then you can wean yourself off of the digestive supplements as your own system gets saturated with the nutrition that it needs to keep digestion working well.
And keep in mind that this is something that we teach people, and this doesn't work for everybody, because here's what happens is that a lot of people, like, they can be not making enough stomach acid, and you can give them a little sea salt, and all of a sudden they have that chloride ion that the body uses to make HCl, and they're right back on track, and they're great. But a lot of people, you give them HCl, they work up to a full dose, and after a month or so, they start to create more HCl, and they can reduce it and even stop using it. But there's a lot of people who the body does not come back online and start to build that own HCl, and they have to use HCl for a long time. And there's a few theories out there as why this happens for some people, but I don't have one that I'm totally on board with yet. I have a few that I'm excited about as possibilities, but none that are like, yeah, that's it, and when we do it, it works. But it's the same situation for raising blood pressure. You know, it just seems like some people pee out mineral as fast as you put it in, and they just kind of need to continue to use supplements and make sure they're using enough sea salt and doing all these steps to be able to continue functioning correctly. And others, you know, can walk by a bottle of HCl and they're fixed. Right. It's like, it's really annoying, you know, for the people that do it too easily.
And you can know like, all right, what pace of weaning off them, if any, is working for you by tracking your chemistry. So like if your blood pressure starts to drift down, like say you did a great job, you fix your digestion, you're taking salts, you got your blood pressure up to close to 120 over 80, and then you're like, all right, cool, I'm going to stop taking those now. And then the next day you can't remember where your keys are, you hate Tony and me. Like you, if you're tracking your blood pressure and that sort of thing, you're going to be able to know, is your chemistry sustaining this point of balance that you created, or is it starting to drift off? And then you can just use the supplements a little bit here and there to maintenance and keep your body balanced.
Right. I like to see people try and reduce things and then watch what happens, not only to how they feel, but what their numbers do. Maybe you try skipping a specific supplement, you know, every other day. Try that first until you don't need it. And then when numbers go awry or those symptoms come back, look at the numbers. Okay, they are going back. I do need that supplement a little bit more for now.
Yeah.
And that's how you kind of figure it out.
Kathy, how do I know if Beet Flow would be better to help my gallstones or coffee suppositories? I tried both. I did.
For some people, they will need both. And for some people, they may only need one or the other. But let's explain what each one's doing differently as far as the thinning and dilating.
Sure. So Beet Flow thins the bile itself, which can be sludgy or sticky and crystallize into what gallstones are. It's crystallized bile. And that can be the source of your problem. And it can block bile flow just obstructively by the bile crystallizing and not being the fluid that it should be. And then there can also be a problem of constriction and blockade of the biliary pathway, which is the pathway or the little river path where the bile is supposed to flow through. And it can happen from either end. You can have problems with the consistency of your bile creating these little crystal deposits that then block the biliary pathway, or you could have like a hormonal thing trigger the constriction of the biliary pathway, and then that blocks the bile from flowing. So it can be hard to know which one is causing it, but it's also useful to know that either way, they both can be helpful.
Right, and for some people, they'll benefit more from another, but another thing to look at is that if you know you have gallstones, like you went to a doctor and he took some type of, you know, sonic test that looked and said, okay, there's gallstones there. If you have that situation, you know that you're in an extreme situation. Like things are not good. So you might want to be aggressive and go both angles.
Yeah. And I don't think I explained, like when you take a coffee suppository, coffee enema, the coffee actually triggers a dilation of the biliary pathway. So that's different than how Beet Flow like makes the bile more liquidy. The coffee enemas or suppositories dilate the pathway that it's supposed to flow through, so then stones can become dislodged and bile can flow more easily. And they can work literally as a great 1-2 punch working from both ends, like the start from the the bile.
That's what
flow.
I did a Beet Flow flush and I did a suppository like a couple times, and then I didn't have any more pain.
Yeah.
And it's drinking coffee does not do the same thing.
And don't try to shove the coffee beans up there.
No,
it didn't work. It doesn't work.
And there's a little other distinction with coffee enemas, or like sometimes some of our mentors will talk about them as being much more powerful than coffee suppositories, and that can be true. But it can also be a lot more disruptive to a situation when you have a coffee enema, because if you're already, say, for example, low electrolytes and you do a coffee enema, you could lose more and get even more lightheaded.
Can I have some cream and sugar with that coffee? Yeah, right. If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com. All right, so let's see. Kathy, nope, Stenio. What's the deal with RALA and MCT oil?
Those are totally different deals. Next question. Okay. So RALA is, I guess
something
I'd say
that. Something with an ice bucket challenge?
No, yeah, yeah, it's an ice bucket. Mm-hmm. Well, the R is the biologically active form of the alpha lipoic acid, and this is, you know, we use this a lot for as a liver detox type of thing. But there's a situation where if bile is not flowing and you're doing things to excite the liver and detox the liver, when all the junk comes out of the liver, there's nowhere for the junk to go if the bile pathway is not flowing. So before you use something like that, if there is a need to use something like that, you really got to make sure that bile is flowing correctly first and take steps like beet flow to get it thin and flowing correctly. MCT oil, it has good uses for it. And basically, coconut oil has MCT oil in it. That's where it's made from. So if you're using coconut oil, you're getting MCT oil. If you have a reason to use more aggressive MCTs, like if you're trying to do a ketogenic diet for therapeutic purposes or something, that can be effective. But when you use MCT oil, start really slow, like maybe even just a quarter of a teaspoon. And it can kind of excite the biliary pathway and get it to start moving a little bit. But if you use more than you can handle, you're going to have discomfort or nausea or butt soup.
The runs.
For yeah, sure. Yeah. So that can be a problem. But it seems that coconut oil is a little bit of a gentler way to get those MCT oils. So even if I'm having someone use MCT oil, I'll have them use coconut oil too and use more of that with just smaller amounts of MCT oil.
Mm-hmm. Richard from Tallahassee, Florida. Is steak considered a protein supplement? What kind of protein powder do you recommend and why? What are the pros and cons of whey versus casein powder?
Casein.
Oh, okay. Which animal-based protein is easiest to digest? Is animal protein better than plant-based? Sorry, got off on a protein tangent. Squirrel! Keep up the great podcasts. Mitch, San Francisco, California. What is the best kind of protein for people in general supplement with, and why? Is it different for different people depending on their chemistry? And if so, what should people who are, like me, too catabolic, emphasize? Brian from Atlanta, Georgia. A ton of people at my gym use whey protein, but then there are a ton of people that use only plant protein supplements because they think animal proteins are bad. What do you think of whey and plant-based protein powders? Should I use them or just eat whole food sources of protein? So confused.
Okay, so first with Richard, yes, steak counts as a protein supplement.
Or just as a protein.
Or just delicious.
Yeah.
So that's my favorite one. And I, if a person can break down that protein correctly, which steak is, you know, those type of things are harder to break down than a sweet potato. So someone has to have digestive capacity to do that. But if they do, I love when people get protein from food and use that. That makes me happy.
Yeah. And I think the amino acids in steak are generally a better profile and more bioavailable than plant-based proteins. Like, coming from a holistic vegan world, like, it's oftentimes talked about that animal proteins are harder to digest than plants, but that's the opposite of true, which would be false.
That'd be false.
Yeah, right. So animal proteins are typically easier for people to digest than plant-based proteins. A problem is when you don't have enough acid in your stomach, you can't digest either, And there's a lot of like pathogens that come along with meat products, as you talked about. Like if you had like a garbage can full of meat or a garbage can full of carrots sitting there for a week, you looked at them later, like the steak is going to look a lot worse.
It's going to have a lot of junk
because all the weird little microorganisms and pathogens. So, yeah, if you don't have enough stomach acid, it's not good to eat meats, and you won't get protein value out of either meats or plant-based proteins. The problem with both of those, though, is like even like the more bad an industrial practice is in raising meats, the worse hormonal balance there is in meats. So there's a lot of things that agricultural and food and livestock companies do now to make the animal grow and retain as much water as possible in as short a period of time while feeding them as little nutritious food as possible to try to save money and be able to sell more meat. And meat is sold by the pound, so the more water that they can get it to retain, the better. So they'll do all sorts of things to induce edema and swelling and water retention, like raise their estrogen levels, pump them full of hormones that create edema, and all that, and stress hormones of cortisol and all that. So like even like the isolation and torturous treatment that they have, that makes them more money. They're not just jerks. Like they're trying to make more money by stressing the animal out as much as possible, which is a really sad, disturbing process, you know? So you're getting all those hormones from stressed out meat physiology, which is very bad for you also just on your hormonal level and the impact of that meat. Additionally, meat proteins are still not like the most balancing. As we talked a lot about the benefits of collagen and gelatin already, and the amino acid profiles in those connective tissues being very therapeutic and fostering longer lifespans and being anti-inflammatory and good for all of our hormone balances, that is not so much found in just flesh foods. So I wouldn't say steak is like the best protein source. I would say gelatin and collagen-based foods are, for pretty much the mass majority of people, that is a great, like gelatin and collagen proteins are the best to have be the predominant protein sources.
And that would be like bone broth stuff.
Bone broth soups, yeah, exactly.
And to clarify a couple things, this, like, yes, eating a steak is harder to break down than a salad, but it's the actual proteins what you're talking about, that when it's plant-based protein, those are harder to assimilate.
Yeah, right.
So, but one thing I view is, you know, what's better, protein, animal-based proteins or vegetable-based proteins, as far as powders or supplements or anything like that. I look at it like this. I view animal proteins as more beneficial to us, closer to something that we can use, easier for us to process. But if I'm going to choose between a mainstream toxic animal protein powder and a mainstream toxic vegetable protein powder, I'm going to pick the vegetable one because of the way they raise the toxic animals puts a lot more bad junk in there than the way they raise the toxic plants. Neither one is good, but I'm going to choose the less bad one. But if I have quality products, then I want the animal protein every single time. And that's why we had such a hard time finding the source of ingredients for our protein powder, because we knew we had to have high quality organic where the animals were being raised correctly. And it turns out that's hard to find.
Yeah.
That was annoying.
It took like 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the first part there. What about the different types of protein? Well, as far as between whey and all other things that people use.
Yeah. So those are good questions. One of the bigger problems that we have against whey is its impact on insulin and the stress hormones of raising estrogen levels and spiking insulin. So we see that's very well known that whey does that. Like they would compare whey to different types of sugars to compare their insulin impacts, and they'd be similar. So if you're trying to keep insulin levels low, or if you're trying to keep your body out of a stress state and the like elevated estrogen, which is generally a good practice to try to reduce.
Unless you want man boobs.
Yeah.
Some people want man boobs.
But even, and you may not have any, and the mass, it's sort of like conception of what estrogen is, we think of it as like, oh, it's a good female hormone, kind of like the equivalent of testosterone for men. It's not that at all. It's like a stress. Yes. It's a stress hormone. Your body will secrete, think of estrogen more akin to cortisol. which everybody kind of feels like, oh, yeah, cortisol is very functional, but also it's an indication that the body is undergoing a big stress state. So things that raise estrogen levels or raise cortisol levels are not good to, like, supplement with intentionally, you know? It's like,
I mean, I'm doing the cellulite one, and everything y'all are talking about with earlier and the vitamin C in the first episode and for all this plant, animal proteins, all that stuff, and collagen, and that's a great one to go back and listen to that podcast, because even though it's about cellulite, it touches on all that stuff that you need, because your body's made up of mainly, like, collagen and stuff, and you need that stuff.
And the big problem with estrogen is that, you know, it's something that a woman makes every day, especially women, and
it tears down your tissue, though, right?
It's supposed to be removed through the bile. So if someone doesn't have bile flowing correctly, those estrogen levels can get very high through the accumulation process.
Yeah. So on purpose, taking whey, because you hear it's like a bioavailable protein, like, I just don't like the hormonal impact of it, period, really.
Right.
Like,
so that's why we didn't go with
it. Yeah. Plant-based proteins have this other problem of being almost completely, if not entirely, completely deficient of glycine and the most important amino acids that your body needs for longevity. So if you look at any, I have not seen any single plant protein, whether it's hemp or pea protein or sprouted protein or
certainly,
soy.
Certainly not soy.
Yeah. None of them have glycine, and which is the most abundant amino acid in collagen. None of them have really any of the amino acids found in collagen, like alanine or proline. They're all almost completely, if not completely, deficient of those amino acids. So it may be argued, like, well, your body will make glycine out of these other amino acids. So glycine isn't called an essential amino acid because, like, oh, you can manufacture it. It's like, well, you have to manufacture it because you're made out of it, right? So it's the equivalent of saying, well, I don't need to eat it. Like, it's like giving someone a tree trunk and saying, well, now you have a boat because you can make a boat out of a tree trunk. Uh-huh. And it's like, well, yes, but it would be a lot easier to do my job of delivering these goods if you just gave me a boat, you know?
Right.
So eating collagen or gelatin-based foods is the equivalent of, like, facilitating your body's ability to just have what it needs rather than having to try to make it out of all these other types of amino acids and resources. And another big problem with plant-based proteins, other than they're harder to digest and completely deficient of the most important amino acids, is they also do things that lower blood pressure and accelerate nitric oxide production. Like, most of them, like hemp, for example, is very abundant in arginine, which dilates the vascular system, accelerates nitric oxide production and free radical damage and inflammation, and lowers blood pressure, which is a huge problem
for a lot of people, really big deal.
Right. Especially if you start going on, like, a lower carb diet to try to, like, lose weight, you're going to tend towards lower blood pressure, and then you take a plant-based protein that pushes it even further down, you're not even going to be able to work out because you're not going to have enough blood pressure to have blood go to your legs and your head at the same time.
Or you're
going to
be really sad by the time the workout's done. You're going to be dizzy or just sad.
Right.
And what about Mitch's question about what if someone's too catabolic? Is there a type of protein powder?
I'm still a fan of using collagen for them, definitely as a reconstructive source, but I would also potentially emphasize supplement with some other amino acids, like glutamine can be a useful one depending on their blood pressure, and there's other go-to amino acids you might use depending on individual chemistry to facilitate different metabolic things or to shift your body to be either higher or lower blood pressure or more anabolic. So glutamine and the ones found in matrix
aminos
are also good.
Yeah. Lysine and proline, glycine.
Yeah.
Cool. Brian from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Alkaline diet?
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just, oh, just stop it.
Don't get up on your soapbox, boys. We know they love that alkalizing.
But we have a whole podcast on alkaline diets, alkaline waters. There's a lot of very important information that you need to be, because if you're going to go down that road, you need to understand.
It's a bad road.
Yeah, that's not only is it a horrible road, but you need to understand why is it beneficial to some people in some regards. And once you understand that, then you can look at your own physiology to figure out, am I one of those people, or am I one of those people that's going to make me totally so much worse? And if it is going to benefit me, what else could I do instead that will benefit me even more?
Yeah, because if you are being sold that diet because someone you know has greatly benefited from it, just sit and wait another few years and see how that person's doing in a few more years. Because the initial benefits found from alkalizing, definitely, like if they keep doing it, especially if they're really religious to it like I was, or obsessive.
Me and, too, right?
Right. The more you actually do it, the worse you will become, you know, as time goes on.
Well, where I was, as I excelled at that diet, was that there were three steps up to my apartment, and halfway up those steps, I had to stop and rest.
Right.
So, nice. So there you go, Brian.
Rania, I have so many questions, I do not know where to begin. Okay, here comes this word. B12 methylcobalamin, sublingual, good idea long term. Is it better to take your omega oils from plant sources rather than fish oil pills? I take it from I take the form of chia seeds and sea buckthorn berry and seed oil pills. What is the best vitamin C on the market? The most natural vitamin C.
Maybe let's do the vitamin C part first so nobody gets yelled at.
I think that was in the other episode when you were talking about that one. The first episode with vitamin
C. Yeah, part one, we talked about vitamin C some. But first of all, it has to be a whole food source. And we talked about that a lot last week. But our favorite ones are Bio-C from Empirical, which is a whole food source. Acerola cherry powder, which we put in our protein powder so that people have easy access to it when they're getting the other benefit.
And one of our other, and one of our mentor formulators wanted to put buckwheat sprout powder in there, or buckwheat berry powder sprout thing from, I guess because there's particular types of cofactors that go along with that vitamin C. We didn't include that because we didn't want people to be scared off by the word wheat.
Wheat in the buckwheat.
Right, right. Yeah. So, which is totally irrelevant because there isn't any of the, like, the gluten or problematic things. But just from understanding people's knee-jerk reactions to that, we didn't. But apparently buckwheat sprout powder has like a particularly rich form of vitamin C in it. But also, there's Camu Camu has a ton of vitamin C in it. Acerola cherry, as you mentioned, and lots of like natural citrus fruits too. If you're in a chemistry that doesn't have to be overly mindful of sugars, like oranges, you know, and strawberries and things like that have a bioavailable form of vitamin C in it. Especially if you're getting it from people who are practicing good nutritional or agricultural practices where their food has minerals in it.
And listen to what we said in that first episode about vitamin C being one of those things that it's one of the things that can be beneficial to most people if you're using a whole food source of vitamin C and not just like ascorbic acid. It's not the same thing. So that's important. So those are the most...
Because you have to have all the cofactors.
Yeah, and those are the best ones on the market are those and plus Living C from Garden of Life. And I think Standard Process has one too, but you need a coach to use those or a doctor. So let's go back to her other stuff about the B12. And that form of B12 is just supposed to be a more bioavailable form.
It's hard to say, so you might not want to take it.
I don't want to go through all that. But B12 is very pro-catabolic. So there are some benefits from B12, but it's very pro-catabolic. So if you're using that on a regular basis, it should be because you're overly anabolic and you're trying to correct that. And same with the fish oils and omega oils that you were asking about. As far as using a plant-based rather than a fish oil, I'd rather have someone eat fish, you know, like salmon or something like that. I would also rather see someone take something like chia seeds and ground them fresh than to use an oil they bought in the store.
Yeah, and I'd also rather them use, if they're trying to use a fatty acid to push themselves more catabolic, I'd rather them use either, like you said, fresh ground flaxseed or olive oil, which is higher omega-9 levels. Because the omega-3s and 6s, they're very pro-catabolic, but you can think of it as like in a tissue destruction kind of way, you know, which...
Right, and I explained this to somebody the other day, and it was like, oh, that makes sense. But it's like this bowl that helps you fix your scraped knee, but while it's doing that, it knocks over all the china in the china store.
Right, right. I personally rather use different minerals and amino acids that can push someone to be more catabolic, like magnesium or like MSM or something like that, that can lower their urine pHs. And I do think there is a place for certain fatty acids in certain cases, but I'd like to try to facilitate the, if they're in an anabolic imbalance, to try to help them push themselves towards a more catabolic state in a less free radical damagey kind of way.
Right. And one of those situations, if someone needs to push more calcium down the tissues, it can be very effective for that. But what I don't want somebody doing is taking it because they heard they're supposed to.
Yeah.
And because it's anti-inflammatory. And yes, it is anti-inflammatory, but it does that while it's knocking down all the china in the china shop.
Yeah.
So there's certain specific situations to use it, but it's not, you know, just because everybody said to use it is not one of them.
Yeah. And when you said use olive oil, that's more to like put on raw vegetables or salads rather than cook with.
Yeah, you would never heat it because all the fatty acids are very subject to rancidity and damage and through heating. So definitely, like even the omega-3s and 6s are so subject to that just your own body heat makes them rancid. So like when they get into your digestive system, you rancidify them. So I'm not a fan of it. Omega-9 is slightly more stable, but yeah, like that's why I'm...
So cook more with like coconut and stuff like
that. Yeah, if you're going to cook, use coconut or heat stable oils like those found in butter or ghee.
Yeah.
All right, we rocked it out.
Wow, that was quick.
Do we have anything else we have to wrap up with?
I want to do a shameless plug for a protein.
Yeah, do that. That's so, new, so people want to know
about it. Yeah, we're excited about it. We've been working on it for 3 years now, making sure it was immaculately free of all weird additives. And my idea behind it initially, which you and other mentors greatly helped shape what it actually looked like, but my idea was to include only the things that we found were really, really beneficial for every major segment of the population, and also to reduce the need for like them leaving my office with like 6 or 7 different staple supplements, like a digestive enzyme, an organic vitamin C,
the probiotic,
a right kind of collagen for them, beet flow, like all those, and other liver support that I had found through years and years of working with people and helping them look at their chemistry. These were things that were pretty much great for everyone and also very effective for almost everyone, while leaving out anything that could push anyone into any particular imbalance. Like, right. Didn't want them to be pushed to be like higher blood pressure or lower blood pressure or more anabolic or catabolic or fast. Like, so that cut out a lot of different like types of things that could have been useful for different reasons. So it's just like something that would really support pretty much everyone as a foundational supplement and save them money by putting all of those things together in one product.
And where can they get that free course that you made explaining a lot of this beneficial?
Yeah, they can go to the product website, which is naturalselectionnutritionals.com. They also have a Facebook page with the same name, Natural Selection Nutritionals. And there's a little post there where you can see a little mini commercial we made about it, but also where you can download the free course, which comes with a little PDF guide that walks you through some of the main teachings in the course and gives you sort of like a preview of all the different things. But there's 10 complete lessons that I built into that course, and some of the lessons got way long, like they're like an hour long video in each of those lessons. So I hope you like all the information that's in it. And if you don't, you can just watch the lessons that seem the most interesting to you. But I'm really proud of the product and hope that everybody loves it.
Yeah, it's going really well so far. Delicious.
Yep, it's great. Okay, so if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. Also, you can go on over if you're interested in learning more about this stuff for yourself, to start a business, or just for your family. Go to healthprocourse.com to learn more about how to become a health coach. And you can also head on over to Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net page. Not page, but website. And then he also has a Facebook page, My Body of Knowledge.
Sure.
All right, well, we'll see you next week then.
And get some protein powder.
Well, bye.
Bye.